Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, February 4th, 2018. This is episode 1460. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Fracture. Fracture is a photo decor company that prints your photos directly onto glass and then delivers them to your door, ready to display, perfect, right out of the box. Visit Fracture.me and use the code TechGuy15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order. And by IT Pro TV, the fun and entertaining way to sharpen your IT skills. Visit itpro.tv/techguy and use the code TG30 to get a free 7-day trial and 30% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. Super Bowl Sunday. Time to talk computer. Don't run to the TV. It's not on yet. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, technology of all kinds. Smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality, virtual reality, that kind of thing. Phone number if you want to talk with me. I'd love it if you would. 888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can use Skype out from everywhere else in the world because it's a toll-free number and it won't cost you anything. Let's see. Website, techguylabs.com. Did you buy a new TV for the Super Bowl? This is, I guess yesterday was the big TV buying day because all the TV manufacturers dropped their prices because it's the end of the TV model year. You know, cars they do it September, October. In TV land, it's usually spring that they wrap up the TV model year, and the 2018s will be coming out in April, May, June, thereabouts. Don't know why that is. I don't know how they all got, you know, on the same schedule and all that, but apparently that's the case. That's what our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, tells me. So there are some pretty good deals. And this year, you know, every once in a while you want to wait for the new model, right? Because there's something coming. And I think in a couple of years there will be something new in televisions. We saw the first glimmerings of micro LED TVs at CES this year. But it won't be something – you can buy it later this year, but it's not ready yet. You want to buy it later. In fact, you probably have 3 or 4 years before micro LED becomes dominant. So right now, your choices are LCD and OLED TVs. You may see TVs built as LED. They're still LCDs. They just have a LED backlight. Oh, man. Alphabet soup, isn't it? And then there's Samsung confusing everything with QLED, QLED, which looks like OLED, but is not OLED. It is merely LCD with quantum dot LEDs doing the backlighting. Both work great. Both look great. If you're buying a new TV, you're almost certainly buying a UHD. I realize this sounds like nonsense at this point. Ultra high def TV with HDR, high dynamic range. And that's what you want. For sure what you want. At this point, there's enough content. Even Netflix, Vudu, and of course there's a UHD Blu-ray players, and man, 4K is good, but when you get that high dynamic range in 4K, it's better. And now we're starting to see programs produced. It's always been easy to produce 4K because those 4K cameras came out a few years ago. Not easy, but not hard either, you know, and the movie industry settled on 4K. HDR is one of the newer technologies. And it makes probably a bigger difference in 4K. But together, you're getting the best picture. Just dramatically good. Last night I watched a new TV show on Netflix. Very adult. Don't recommend it for the kiddies. Sci-fi show called Altered Carbon. Very sexy. Netflix is obviously trying. Well, how sexy can we get here? Can we get Cinemax sexy? Anyway, but it was a great sci-fi novel, which I loved when it came out some years ago. And they've made, I think, a very good television adaptation of it. But it's shot in 4K, ultra high def, with high dynamic range. I know, because my TV pops up a little thing when you turn on the show. It says, oh, this is HDR. I'm going to do this in HDR. You also know, because if you look at it, and this is what I thought was most interesting, is it's clear that this was shot specifically to show off ultra high def, high dynamic range. There are a lot of scenes, and you're seeing this more and more, you know, it's good, it works, where they are very dark, or there's dark shadows, and then there's bright highlights. And it's, you know, it works in a movie anyway, it's dramatic. But it also, on HDR, the darks are darker, the brights are brighter, the dynamic range is expanded, so it's very realistic, and it shines, literally, it shines. I was watching one scene where, I guess it's kind of a dark street, but there's headlights in the distance, and they hurt your eyes, just as headlights on a dark street would. The TV is capable of that much brightness and that much range. I mean, they don't hurt your eyes like you're going to damage them, but they're bright. You look at them and you go, you squint. Oh, those are bright. That's pretty remarkable coming out of a television set. So, and that's part, it's a triangle of things that have to happen. And all three of them have to happen before I would make the recommendation you buy these TVs. Of course, the TVs have to be available and fairly affordable, and they are. 4K is almost now the standard, no matter what you get. By the way, I'll use 4K and UHD interchangeably because it's the same thing. 4K, it was an older term. I should just call it UHD, but people know 4K. And you'll even see 4K on the box. You'll even see 4K if you go to Roku, for instance. They have a 4K showcase, so 4K is ultra high def. That's twice as high resolution as high def HD, both vertically and horizontally. So it's 2x2 or 4 times more dots. 4K, 4 times the dots. Very high resolution. That means even if you're sitting fairly close to the TV, and I do, for best effect, you want to sit close enough so the TV's like a movie screen. It's edge to edge. You know, you don't want to have to look around on the screen, but you kind of want to have it go to the edge of your view, most of it. And I sit within, I think, 8 inches of a 70-inch TV. 8 feet, not 8 inches. 8 feet of a 70-inch TV. That's pretty good. That's a movie theater, especially if you get the surround sound and a comfy lounger and a bag of popcorn. Man, you could be in a movie theater except for the kids on the smartphones behind you talking and the people in front of you unwrapping candy. And the sticky floor. But other than that, it's just like a movie. It looks good. So that's part one of the triangle. You got to have that. You got to have yourself. You have to have high-speed internet, highest speed enough to stream it, or a UHD player, one or the other. Ideally, both. Because you don't want, I mean, these days, do you want to buy a lot of discs? People are slowly moving away from physical media. And streaming media, I've watched Altered Carbon on Netflix. It's a Netflix show, so I watched it as streaming. There is no Blu-ray DVD of it yet. And if you have enough bandwidth, about 50 megabits down, I think 25 to 50. 25 is the minimum. 50 would be nice. You're going to get all the bits, not too compressed. The third part of it is people have to make content for it. And this is always the chicken and egg problem. They're not going to make content for that unless a lot of people have the TVs, and you're not going to buy the TV unless you can do something with it. Well, we've kind of crossed that bridge, I think. Last year was the kind of the turning point where there's enough content out there on a variety of streaming services. Amazon has it on their Amazon Prime service. Netflix has it. And now Apple TV has it. They just put that one out, right, a couple of months ago. You'll have to get a 4K streamer, whether it's the updated Roku, the Chromecast Ultra, the new Apple TV. You'll have to get the hardware, the UHD player. You'll have to get the TV, and you'll have to get the bandwidth. So I guess it's really not a triangle, but a square. You have to have all of this stuff. And then, finally, the big one, content. And the content's here. It's clear. I've been seeing more and more really gorgeous 4K shows. If you have a 4K TV, particularly HDR, that's the key. What are you watching? What do you like? Is there something good? This has become part of the conversation now, right? Among geeks. What's new? What's new on Netflix? What do I watch now that Stranger Things is over? That was 4K UHD, by the way. It looked really good. Looked really good if you haven't seen it. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. I can also help you with your tech problems, your questions. This is the place. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll get back to the phones and your questions. Kim Schaffer's lining them up at 8888 Ask Leo right after this. Yeah! Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Can't watch, of all things, the Super Bowl, though, in 4K. We were talking about UHD, HDR. Man, sports would look really good that way. I think the Winter Olympics will be partially broadcast in 4K, but you'll have to figure out how to do it. I think you'll have to have a cable company that supports it, because broadcast television does not yet do 4K, period. So there are, I'm just looking, there are, is this, I don't think this is the, it was this way last year. You can stream the Super Bowl in a lot of ways now. According to CBS, which is broadcasting it, Fubo, F-U-B-O TV, I don't know what that is, has online streaming of the Super Bowl. And I think if you haven't signed up for Fubo, you can try it for free today. Ooh, that would be good. iOS, Android, Windows, Amazon tablets. Are you watching? Are you watching the Super Bowl?
Yes.
Right now?
No, I'm not watching it right now.
Right now, Kim Schaffer?
I haven't started the 7-hour pregame.
It is on, you know.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, there's no TVs here.
Before I left for work, I noticed we were taking a tour of the locker rooms. They're desperate, really, at this point for content. You can watch
the cameras
on
cameras be kept out of the locker rooms?
Well, I think that's why they were doing it so early. It's before anybody arrived. Okay. Boy, they look clean and tidy before anybody
they're
gets
not
there.
Sweaty. Yeah.
No. You can watch on an Apple TV, a Roku, Android TV, Chromecast, Amazon Fire, Xbox One. I have to think this is... Remember, was it last year that Verizon had the lock, right? You had to have a Verizon phone to watch the Super Bowl.
I'm just old school. I watch on the TV. Well, make it easy on myself.
You know, I'm working on an article about this for a magazine. I think it's kind of interesting. The big events like this, we still kind of do gather around the TV, don't we? Like,
yeah, I'm going to a party.
Yeah. So. Yeah. But that doesn't mean we don't watch a lot of content on other devices. It's just the big events we watch.
The big events we like to get together.
Because it's
a
social
thing.
I've been
to an Oscar party before.
Yeah, that's fun too, isn't it?
Yeah. Dress up.
Yep.
Champagne.
You have all the side bets and so forth, you know, who's going to win what, and you have the pool. And yeah, it's fun.
It is fun.
But I think that's a few times a year now. And then have the rest of the time, you know, you're alone watching your iPad. What you've been taking? I'm not alone. You're not alone. We're surrounded by phone calls.
We are.
Who should I start with today?
How about Mike in Portland looking for a USB-C dock for his brand new MacBook Pro?
Oh, but this is a search many are engaged upon at this moment. Yes. Yes, it is.
He has not found the right one yet.
Oh, I was wrong. NBC has a Super Bowl. I will watch the wrong channel then. Why is this on CBS Sports? Maybe they don't want you to watch NBC. Oh, ow, burn. Why is CBS talking about how to watch it?
They're not airing it, right?
They're not airing it. Isn't that funny? I am looking at this on CBS Sports. I just assumed the article, how to watch the Super Bowl.
Oh, so they're just trying to take you away from NBC.
Yes.
That's funny.
Isn't that hysterical? Oh, my goodness.
NBC trolling or CBS trolling NBC.
They are. That's hysterical. Mike, Portland, Oregon, Leo Laporte. Thank you, Kim, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I am well. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I don't have a 4K TV. I'm actually still rocking a 1080p plasma.
That's fine.
So, old school here.
That's our living room TV. That's what we'll be watching the Super Bowl on. Unless you're sitting up close, 1080p is fine. But I have
I was going to say that's not what I'm calling about.
Okay.
I'm actually looking for a dock for my MacBook Pro. I bought a MacBook Pro. I went on a lot of different websites looking around for different things, and I can't seem to find one that doesn't have a lot of problems.
Yeah. I have two docks. I have the Henge, H-E-N-G-E dock. and I have the Otherworld Computing dock. So the new MacBook Pros have these Type-C connectors. This is very confusing. Type-C, those are the round connectors you can put in any way, upside down or right side up. They're going to be the future phones. Every phone but iPhones will going forward probably have Type-C connectors. Many laptops charge on Type-C. The problem is that connector doesn't tell you a lot. It's a Type-C connector, but then it could be connected to a USB port, USB 3.1 high-speed port, to a Thunderbolt port, Thunderbolt 3 port. Sometimes they have charging capabilities so that you could charge the device. The MacBook Pro does, in fact, charge that way. And sometimes they don't. And then sometimes they do other things and sometimes they don't. And it's you have to look at the specs, which are buried somewhere, to figure out what your port does. I'll tell you, on yours, it is a Type-C connector with a Thunderbolt 3 capability, which can be used both for charging, for video, for USB, and for Thunderbolt 3. It's kind of it's what you want. It's the top of the line, basically, Type-C port.
Yeah, and I was kind of looking for one that wanted to be able to charge it. That'd be awesome if I could just plug one cable in, and then I have output so I could use my monitors with it, and keyboard, mouse, and all that fun stuff. Right now, I basically have a dongle for everything.
Yeah, it's annoying, isn't it? So the hinge dock, which I bought a little while ago, I got one called the Wedge. It looks like a wedge anyway. It has a connect one Type-C for charging on the side, and then the other Type-C goes into the Macintosh. So your Macintosh is connected to the dock and charging, and then from then on it has additional ports like Ethernet ports, and it has it's kind of a strange choice, but they have a port for the older monitors, a mini display port. Let me see what they call this one. They have a variety of them. My favorite, though, is not the hinge, although it's well done. You can get those at hingedocs.com. It's Otherworld Computing's, and it's expensive, Thunderbolt 3 dock. Now, the advantage of this is you're getting Thunderbolt 3. You're getting full speed out of it. It has 13 ports, which is crazy. On the back, it's got four USB 3.1 ports, the old Type A, two Type C ports. One will go to the computer. And if you wanted to charge, you don't have to worry about charging because it has its own power cord. So it's charging the computer not via Type C, but by a regular proprietary power cord. It also has Ethernet mini display port. It's got optical audio. It's got, it's just crazy. It's got an SD card reader, a headphone jack. That's what I use with my iMac Pro at home. And the reason I like this one is because you get full Thunderbolt 3 speed. Many of these other ones, including the hinge, I believe, you're not getting Thunderbolt 3 out of that port. You're getting USB 3.1. So that's one thing to look for, is what that port is giving you and what it can do. And it's not apparent from looking at it. So I would say look at either one of these, and then I think the hinge dock, I want to say it's $300. The Otherworld Computing, maybe $300 as well. They're not cheap. But yes, they solve that problem because you get there and you just plug in your laptop and you're good to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I'll have to check those out.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. Otherworld Computing at maxsales.com has always got my dollar. That was $300.
Yeah, I thought I could try the dongle thing, and
but this is nice because then you can carry the laptop around, but when you get home, you plug in one connector, your Type-C connector, and then you're good to go. I don't for some reason see the hinge. Let me see. Is it called a mobile dock? No. I'm looking to see which dock I have of the hinge and what it does. So yeah, that's one thing you got to be really careful about, is these ports don't always do what they say they're going to do. They have some that have Thunderbolt, so, you know, I don't see the one I bought. Maybe the one I bought, they stopped making. I just got it recently, though, which is strange. I don't see it on their site anymore. If you can pay $300, that's the Otherworld Computing's awesome. And as I said, I use it with my Mac Pro, so it's, here it is. It's called the Stonehenge.
And
stone. Get it? And it's $199, so it's $100 less. But I think it's somewhat limited, as I remember. I'll have to look at the specs on it. Anyway, there's some good choices out there, one way or the other. Yeah, and it is a much – the nice thing about the Stone, if you look at it, is it's a wedge that you put your laptop on. So it kind of tilts it up. So
it's even better.
Yeah, it's kind of designed – I use that at home for my MacBook Pro. But then, as I said, for the iMac Pro, I like having a dock.
It's got a little something where I'm coding somewhere else. I can put it back on the dock and just one cable plug, and I'm ready to go.
And then what they give you is the capability of having a keyboard, mouse, and monitor. So it becomes a desktop when you get, you know, home, which is kind of the best of both worlds. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
What kind of coding do you do?
Oh, I started out with scripting and PowerShell, and then I had a blog for that where I basically went from writing posts to now I'm more helping people in the comments.
Nice.
Kind of like doing both.
What's
and
your site?
My site is gngrninja.com for the Ginger Ninja.
Are you a redhead?
I am indeed a redhead.
Nice.
And I own it.
Yeah, I love it.
I went from there to C Sharp, and I think C Sharp is going to be where I'm going to be for a little while now. Seems to be a lot of cool things happening with it right now, so I'm kind of learning that a lot.
Are you looking into a progressive web apps?
I'm looking into that a little bit right now. I've just kind of been a general IT guy for about 10 years, and I'm actually starting now to get more from operations to the dev side of things. So I have kind of the both sides of experience now, and it's kind of an exciting time for that, it seems.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Well, have a great time. This is cool. I'm bookmarking this in my programming folder. I'm always trying to learn more PowerShell. It's very useful.
If you're in the Windows world, it's definitely cool to learn. And right now, they actually have version 6, which they released for you can use it on.
I know. They just put it on the Mac. It's hysterical and Linux.
And it's pretty cool. There's some little gotchas with it, but that's with anything new. And it's definitely something that's going to be worth looking at, I think.
Yeah. Hey, nice to talk to you. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Leo.
All right, Mike. Take care. Hello, Johnny Jet.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I am very well, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Got back home all right?
I am home. We did a little staycation.
Nice.
Went to the Langham, Pasadena. You been there?
No. Is it Art Museum?
No. That was the Getty Villa.
I saw your Getty pictures. I love the Getty. Yeah. I had never been there. I went there for the first time.
This is the Getty Villa. There's two in L.A. So there's a Getty Museum and the Getty Villa.
I can't remember
villa
which
is
we
down
went
by
to.
The beach.
No, we went to the museum. It was up in the hills. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the villa. Oh, we have to go to the villa.
Well, the villa's they're both in the hills, but the one – you probably went to the museum, which is the famous one, and it's near UCLA, and they supposedly have enough marble to pave a two-way highway to
– It has a really nice
Arizona.
Park, outside park with fountains and stuff. Anyway.
Yeah.
Here we go.
All right.
He's been everywhere, Johnny Jet, our traveling guy, johnnyjet.com. He joins us every week to talk travel and technology, normally on Saturdays, but Johnny was traveling, and so we got him today. Hi, Johnny. Super Bowl Sunday.
Yes. I'm not too excited about this one. I actually dislike both teams since I'm a New York Giants fan.
Good. So you can hate them both equally.
I don't know who to root for.
Root for fumbles. Root for turnovers.
Yeah. Who are you rooting
root
for?
Root for blocked kicks. I'm a East Coast boy. I grew up in Rhode Island, so I should be rooting for the Patriots, but I'm sick of them winning. So yeah. I'd like to see the Eagles.
I grew up in New England too, but Southern Connecticut. And I always think New England's really Boston, or at least the Patriots.
Foxborough, for crying out loud. It feels like it's closer to Rhode Island than it is Boston.
It's true. Well, that is true. So, anyway,
you
gotta
Johnny,
love Tom Brady.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, it's always fun to watch him. It's like you want to hate the Patriots, but then when he kicks into gear, boy,
the
he's
guy's
just nothing
amazing.
Like it.
He's
yeah,
really amazing.
Greatest quarterback of all time. So, Johnny is the greatest traveling guy of all time, and each week he brings us an app and a website help us travel better. With technology.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I got a couple. So actually, one of your listeners sent me this tip that Canada has a new low-fare carrier, which I did not realize, and they're launching in June 20th. It's called Swoop, S-W-O-O-P.
Low-fare carriers, what Spirit would be one in the U.S., right?
Correct, for sure.
Ryanair in Europe.
Yep.
They tend to be short hops, and they no frills, right?
No frills, exactly. And actually, they're not so short hops anymore. And Southwest was the original low fare carrier.
They're not anymore, though, are they? Or are they?
I mean, they are and they aren't. So they're not like Spirit and Allegiant and others. But this one is going to be like it. And in Canada right now, the real low fare carrier was WestJet. And then Air Canada came out with their own little Rouge to kind of compete with these guys. So this one's actually going to be an ultra low cost carrier. And, you know, so
$39
they have fares
right now. Abbotsford to Edmonton. That's very Canadian.
It is.
I don't even know where. I know where Edmonton is, but I don't know where Abbotsford is. That's funny.
But they do have Halifax to Hamilton. Edmonton for $99. So, nice. But then you look at the fees. So they'll charge you, like Spirit, for a carry-on baggage that doesn't fit underneath a seat. If it fits in the overhead bin, you got to pay, you know, it goes up all the way up to the gate.
Wow. Wow.
So
not just for bags, checked bags, but even for
everything.
Yeah.
Everything. And you know what? They pack you in. There's 189 seats on the 737-800. So in Southwest has 175 seats on that same aircraft, and American and United both have 154 seats.
So sometimes I hear airlines talk about seat pitch, which is what the distance between where your knees go.
From the back of the chair to the front.
And
what is
a normal seat pitch? What are the kind of the...
Well, it used to be 35 inches, and then all of a sudden the airline started cutting it down.
What's Spirit? Now, Spirit's like 21 or something?
No. It's 32.
Oh, okay. So it's not that
31,
bad.
31 is usually the average. So Southwest is like 32, 33. American is now 31.
But if I noticed American is really tight all of a sudden.
Oh, big time. Unless you can get main cabin extra, which is about 35 inches, and that's about the same for United for their premium economy. You know, you're really going to – you can't work on your laptop. You can't.
Yeah.
It's miserable. So
yeah, I noticed that.
I always try and get the exit row, pay extra, or become an elite freaking flyer, and you'll get it for free.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know. So yes, what is Swoop, flyswoop.com? What is Swoop's seat pitch? Do we know?
I'm guessing it's around 30, yes, 29.
That's a lot.
I'm guessing it's 29, which is the same as Spirit.
Wow.
And that is you can't go any lower than that.
No, I barely could fit into Spirit.
Well, good for you for flying Spirit. You can pay me to fly Spirit unless I was flying up front, because they do have these big front seats.
Swoop seating arrangement. Well, we don't know if it's 30 or 29. But many low-cost carriers are going down to 28. I couldn't do it.
It's 20.
I'm not even tall, and I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
All right.
So Swoop, but you know, $39 to go to Abbotsford. That's
good. But they're going to charge you again. And another tip about all these other low fare carriers, they charge you for everything.
Yeah.
So they allow you to bring a carry on in for free as long as it fits underneath the seat.
You got to read.
They do not let you bring it on in for free to put it in the overhead bin.
Read the fine print. Sometimes they charge you for like things that are weird, like getting on early, and I mean just all sorts of stuff.
For sure. Yeah. Early boarding, picking your seat. And you know what? Now the big carriers, American, United, and Delta, do the same thing.
Yeah.
So you have to read all the fares you buy with a fine tooth.
See what
comb
you get.
Yeah, because you don't want to have any surprises, because they ding you at the gate big time.
And you if you just pick by fare, like say on, I think it was United, they have some really low cost fares that doesn't cover anything.
Yeah. Well, so does Delta. American. They're economy fares.
Basic economy.
And if you use Google Flights, which I do a lot, you know, it doesn't show up the basic. It doesn't show up as the regular fares. It shows up the basic economy. So you see, I'm flying this week to Florida, and it says $99 to Miami. Yeah. Well, you click it, and then it goes into American's site and say, well, that's basic economy.
Right.
If you want to be able to choose your seat, get miles, be able to board early, it's going to cost you $200. So you gotta search around and do your research.
Now, I go to JohnnyJet.com to book flights because you have a flight finder. But you said you use Google?
I do. I use Google Flights a lot because it's better than my search engine. Although I do have a pretty good search engine, but the one Google Flights,
they bought,
you can really
they bought
sort by Alliance, by airline, which connections you want to make. Because I want to avoid certain airports, especially in the wintertime.
Now they tell you the flight delay. I think we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. They tell you flight delays based on averages from previous flights. I mean, that's very interesting, isn't it? I might have to switch.
Well, I don't blame you.
What's your app for the week?
So this one's called Snap and Translate. It costs $9.99. It's only on iOS. But what I love about it is, you know, in the old days when you travel, it's very difficult to communicate with other locals if you don't speak their language. Yeah. And I remember one time I was dating an Argentinian girl, and I could not translate anything, even a pineapple. But this one will let you take a photograph of a pineapple, and it will tell you what it is in Spanish or 46 other languages. Or you can take a picture of any object, which I love. So
and it can translate it based – what?
Yes.
Wow. So Google Translate doesn't do that. I think Google Lens might.
I don't think they do the objects.
No.
They'll do the menus.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this will do the menus too, but I love the objects.
Nice. So signs, menus, but even things.
Yes.
How do you say balloon in Turkish? And there it is, right there in front of you. Interesting. That is called Snap and Translate, innovative photo translator from Appian Apps.
Apple 46 on, languages Apple on apps,
translates. And it's on iOS only. Johnny, as always, a wealth of knowledge. JohnnyJet.com is his website. Go there now, and you can see all sorts of stuff, including these links, but wonderful, useful articles, inspiring articles.
Yep.
Follow him
on
Twitter.
And I have a great restaurant for you, by the way. After we went to the Getty yesterday, we were going to go to Duke's Malibu, and those guys are terrible.
What?
But
they're famous, aren't they?
Malibu is awesome.
Wait a minute. So don't go to
nice
Duke's.
Nice day, go to Joffrey's.
Go to Joffrey. Don't go to Duke's. Go to Joffrey's. Don't go to Duke's.
I love Duke's in Waikiki, but the one in Malibu is
it's famous. Okay. So, and this is the Getty Villa.
Yeah, the Getty Villa.
If you go to the Villa, which is in Malibu.
And you need to make a reservation at Joffrey's, but man, it's right on the water overlooking and a beautiful day. A lot of Hollywood stars will be there. Ooh. It's not cheap, but man, what a treat.
Ooh, how fun. That sounds like fun. I had never been to the Getty. I went there for the first time a few years ago, and I was blown away. It's a beautiful, not just the museum, but the property is beautiful. Somebody told me it's built
Getty
in
Villa
an old
has
landfill.
65 acres on the water.
Really? Oh, now I got to check it out. JohnnyJet.com. Follow him on Twitter, too, at Johnny Jett, and on Instagram. Lots of great pictures of him, his wife, his beautiful wife, Natalie, and, of course, their one-year-old Jack. Thank you so much, Johnny. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Get back to the phones. More of your calls as we talk high tech right after this. So are you going to not watch the Super Bowl?
No, I mean.
You have to watch it just for the ads.
No, for sure. I mean, listen, I'm a football fan. I'm a New York Giant fan, and I've always, those are the two teams I hate the most. And,
wow.
So I don't know.
That kind of takes the fun out of it. Here's what's going to happen. It always happens. Happened last year. Happened in the playoffs. Get to the halftime. Unaccountably, the Eagles, 5-point underdogs, they're going to be up 17 points, is my prediction.
Yes.
17 points. Everybody's going to say, it's unheard of. The Patriots, they're going to lose. And then, of course, in the last 2 minutes, Tom Brady will score 4 touchdowns. It's over.
Well, that's what makes the Giants wins against them so incredible. And I was fortunate to be at the very first one.
Oh, nice.
Super Bowl. And it was just like everyone thought, including myself, that the Patriots are going to come back. But the Giants had that miracle catch.
Why do people hate the Eagles? I can understand why people hate the Patriots. Although, you know, you got to grudgingly admire them.
Yeah. Well, this is their last year.
Yeah, because how long can Brady keep going?
Well, it's not Brady. It's they're losing their offensive defensive coordinators. They're all going to get.
Oh, really? The guy with the beard's going?
Yep, he's going to be a head coach.
I love seeing him with his backwards hat. He's such a bro.
They're good. I mean, I wish he was going to the Giants. The Giants snapped up the Minnesota coach.
Oh, he is good. Yeah, yeah.
So, anyway,
all right. Have a good one, Johnny. Enjoy the family. Enjoy I'm sure it's going to be a beautiful day in Manhattan.
Yeah, I'm going to play volleyball right now.
Nice. I'm so jealous. Have fun. See you later.
Take care.
I want to talk about Fracture. Look at these. Now, you have a family and you got kids and you have lots of great pictures. Don't let those pictures languish in the shoebox, or what I call nowadays the digital shoebox, Apple Photos or Google Photos, where you never see them. Print them. And don't just print them. Go to fracture.me and print them on glass. Look at here's my son and daughter. This is college grad or high school graduation. So this is how they come. This is printed on glass. They print in Gainesville, Florida, using U.S. materials in a carbon neutral factory. They call it their fractory. This is the 8x10, I think, or maybe a little bit bigger. I put a border on it, but you don't have to. You can have. In fact, I'll show you a borderless one. Glass, somehow, there's printing it on glass, brings out the colors. That was a black and white. This is color. This is the borderless. It just, it kind of floats on the wall, so it really looks, it just, the photos pop. This is Lisa's picture of me. They come backed with foam core, and they come with everything you need to hang them on the wall. Look at that. As part of the packing material. See, you get the screw, and it's a good drywall screw, and then the little hanging thing. Although, notice there's two, so you can hang it. This one you would hang this way. And they know, and they do it properly. The smallest one, right here is the smallest one. This is 8th grade graduation. 4.8 by 6.4 inches. That's the smallest one. I should show you here. I'll show you on the close-up. Now, Lisa processed the color on this, and it really looks great because she wanted to pop the Lays. Really looks great. This is Fracture, fracture.me. If you use the offer code TechGuy15 at checkout, you'll get 15% off your first order. Load up the cart. Put all your best pictures in there. Everybody's got one or two pictures you just can't wait to show everybody. Get ready? This is what you put over the fireplace. This is the biggest one. This is 21.6 by 28.8 inches. That's a picture I took in the Galapagos, and that's, you know, I'm really fond of it, so I printed it big. Look at that. It just comes alive. Every fracture tells a story. Every picture. Don't let them die in the digital shoebox. Get those pictures on your wall where they belong. And by the way, what a great gift. Fracture.me. Use the offer code TechGuy15, and you'll get 15% off your first order. And there is a one-question survey after you order. Just take it and put, when it says, how did you hear about it? The Tech Guy. That's all. Just, it helps us. It supports the show. Fracture.me. Code is TechGuy15. We'll give you 15% off if you mention us. Because then they know, people actually hear that ad. I love these. This was the gift of the year. Last year I gave these out to everybody in the family. And by the way, every fracture comes with a 60-day happiness guarantee. You're guaranteed to love your order. Fracture.me, TechKai15 is the offer code. It's going to be a good night tonight for one of those teams. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. Line 1, David in BC. You know where Abbotsford is.
It's a stone's throw away from where I am.
Yeah. Would you hop on that Swoop flight for $39 to Edmonton?
Why would you want to go to Edmonton?
maybe it's Edmonton to Abbotsford that's the interesting route. Abbotsford's pretty.
It's always a good flight wherever you go in Canada.
Yeah, I love Canada. It's great to talk to you. Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
I'm at a remote site where we have our wireless brought in, mm-hmm. and then we have a access point right in the middle of our job site. And then we have a couple antennas stuck onto our shipping containers, which we use as offices.
Oh, interesting. But yeah, because a shipping container is a Faraday cage. Nothing will get inside that thing, I'm sure.
Well, that's why we have these little tiny Best Buy antennas.
Yeah, you put them outside, you run a wire in, and now you've got internet.
Yes, but it only goes to one computer. And I'm wondering if there's a way we can put a router inside the container feeding off that antenna, or some other way of getting it into the container.
There is. So there are routers. Well, technically all routers, but it's not sometimes easier than other times, can add an external antenna to. So all you really need is a router, any router, and the appropriate wire to an external antenna. The funny thing is, the weird thing is, for some reason, it's been dictated that each router's connector be unique. There's no standard. So you have
little coax type connectors.
Yeah, they're little weird coax ones. And there's something about the Wi-Fi standard that states the antenna connectors have to be unique. And I'm sure there's a good technical reason for it. somebody will call and explain it. Maybe it has to do with the impedance of the antenna or something. So what you'll need to do is go somewhere that sells Wi-Fi routers and this is going to be online, and the attachable antennas that go with it. There are a couple of sites that do this.
So I can't plug in my USB into a router then?
If you have a USB Wi-Fi adapter, is that what you're talking about?
Well, because I already have an existing antenna with a USB on it, I would like to plug that into a router if I could. But if I can't, I'll have to new antenna.
Oh, because you already bought an antenna for that. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's... Well, okay, so if you're going to buy a router, it's not expensive to buy the external antenna for the router.
And then 20 feet of cable to get it into the computer.
Yeah, in fact, it'll come with cable. And it doesn't go into the computer, it goes into the router.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, some routers, like if you buy an ASUS router, you'll notice that you can unscrew the antenna. You can actually disconnect the antennas, and there's a, like, looks like a mini coax there. That's the one you're going to get, you're going to extend it that way. Let me think about this, though. So the antenna you've got goes to a USB, type A USB connector.
It's an antenna that I think it's an ASUS type antenna. It's just a USB connector you put into your laptop if you were in the coffee shop.
And it's 20 feet long?
Well, no. We would need a cable to get into the...
I see. So that USB thing looks like a USB thumb drive, right, that you plug into the laptop. It's got an antenna internally. It doesn't... I mean, you could look at it and pry it apart, take the plastic off, and see if there is an external antenna connector. I'm betting a USB one, they don't have room, so they don't put it in there. But almost all routers or adapters have an external antenna connector, but sometimes it's sealed inside the box. That's why those ASUS, for instance, where you can disconnect the antenna, that's great because it's outside the box and it's just... So you want one with a removable antenna, basically. You could, without damaging it, I mean, it would look ugly, but you could pry apart the two plastic pieces on that USB antenna and see if there's a connector. But I'm guessing there isn't, because there's just not much room in there, right?
No, I understand that.
Yeah. So, I think that's what you're going to have to do. The good news is I don't think that USB antenna, USB adapter costs very much, right?
That'll be good.
Yeah. And there are a number of places. Somebody's recommending wirelesshack.org. Antenna Web is one of the places I go to get antennas for this kind of thing. It's a fairly easy thing to find. In fact, it's almost part of the spec, I think, of Wi-Fi that you could have attach an external antenna. And then just bring it out of the what is the construction site? What are you doing out there?
Building some houses.
Nice.
But it's a remote area.
Yeah. So they're not going to have any internet either.
Oh, no. They have cable, telephone, and everything comes right in.
Wow. Nice.
Once we run the lines.
I bet you new home construction now that you just wouldn't think of putting in a new home without having high-speed internet available.
They will have it once we trench the wires to them.
That's a long trench.
So,
how long is the trench?
This one is, I think it's 600 some feet.
Wow.
To get to the power.
Wow. Patch. Yeah, I remember I lived on a farm, and the Comcast cable went by the farm, but the street was hundreds of feet from the house, and I inquired. It was going to cost thousands of dollars to trench out to it. It's fairly expensive to do. So, good. They're lucky. They're going to get all the internet they want. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Say hi to Abbotsford. I'm not pandering when I say I like Canada. I used to go up there for years. I did a TV show out of Toronto, then later Vancouver. Used to go up there 1 week a month, and I just, you know, I fell in love with the country and the people. Very nice people. It's the old saying: if you're walking down the street and accidentally step on a Canadian's toes, he'll apologize. Getting under your feet. Seattle, Washington. Dave on the line. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Great, great. Love your show. I heard last week you mentioned MoviePass at the end of the...
Yeah, do you use that?
So I do, and I love it. And I just got an email from MoviePass a couple days ago because although it works at the AMC theaters, there are nine, exactly nine across the country that they no longer work at.
I don't understand this. So the movie pass, you pay a monthly, or rather a yearly, is it monthly or yearly fee?
You have the option of either. Okay. I pay $90 a year.
$90 a year, and you can see as many movies as you want. And the way you buy the movie is it's a credit card, right?
Right.
So how does AMC even know you're using MoviePass?
I don't know how they know. They don't really care when you buy the tickets, but...
they get the money. By the way, the movie theater gets the full ticket price. It's right. These crazy people at MoviePass. At first I thought I was like a gym membership. They're betting most people just won't use it that much. But I understand now what they're going to start doing is using it to market movies. Because when a movie is promoted on MoviePass, ticket sales go up 10 to 20%. Because you
use all your demographics.
And MoviePass people who love movies, right? And since it costs you nothing to see a movie, you're more likely to just go see it. So it's a very interesting business. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How do you like it? I mean, do you use it? Is it make sense for you? You'd have to use it $90 for a year. You'd only have to use it once a month to make it pay for itself.
Yeah, I think 8 times for the year or 7 times for the year, and it pays for itself, yeah.
And are there any theaters in Seattle that won't take it?
Well, again, this one in Linwood, just north of Seattle, no longer takes it. And not because AMC won't accept it. MoviePass decided that theater, plus a couple in L.A. and a couple in Florida and one in Chicago and one in Boston, they no longer want it to be used at those theaters.
Oh, so MoviePass is blocking it, not the theater.
Right.
Oh.
And my theory is they're the more expensive ones. It's like Century City in L.A.
Oh, yeah. You have MoviePass, right, Kim? Kim Schaffer has MoviePass. So you have the app.
And theaters, it'll tell you everything.
So I can use it at our local theater.
Yeah, I've gone there many times.
Boulevard Cinemas. I really thought this was like a gym membership where they figure most people aren't going to use it. It's not the secret.
No, because I've gone to, like...
Because people do use it. So what it turns out is you users are prime real estate for movie theater companies. In fact, they're even thinking now of producing their own movies. It's very interesting.
Well, what's funny, too, is AMC sent me an email, and they apparently do know I'm using it because I have the Stubbs card, which is like their frequent flyer, their loyalty card.
Oh, you can't use that.
I noticed that I didn't know that. It's in the fine print.
You're going to lose your points. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They said, we're going to cancel your membership unless you stop using it. I'm like, okay, I guess I won't use it anymore. You know, the Stubbs card, that is, not the movie pass.
Right. The movie pass is a better deal than the Stubbs card.
Yeah, Stubbs is like $50. You get $50. Every 50 you spend, you get $5 free, which was handy. I was building up points quite rapidly, but...
But see, this is why, this is exactly the point, Dave. This, you are, you, and I bet you too, Kim, you go to a lot of movies.
I do.
Yeah.
Only because of this. I never went before.
But that makes you prime real estate because now what happens is MoviePass sells... They say there's a big movie coming out, right? And they will do a market. They'll take money from the movie producers because they know that if they promote it on MoviePass, they can increase ticket sales like 10, 15%.
But they're not really promoting it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they will. Watch. You're going to see in the app, you're going to start seeing, hey, the Phantom Thread's out. Would you like to see it? You wouldn't mind that anyway. That wouldn't be annoying. No. And what'll happen is it subsidizes MoviePass. At least that's the theory.
It's all about the
movie theater doesn't make money from the ticket. They make money from popcorn. So that's why I don't understand why AMC cares at all. They still get the ticket price, and that goes to the producer, most of it. And I don't understand why.
The theater more often buying more concessions.
Yeah, it seems like
win-win for them.
It seems like they're being churlish, dogs in a manger. Anyway, so now I haven't bought it because I thought, I don't think I'm going to go to the movies. I don't go probably that often. But you go more.
You go 8, 9 times a year.
I know.
You get the Costco deal. $89.
Hey, Leo, on a different note, you mentioned the TiVo thing earlier with the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Isn't that funny?
And I was reading on your website about the if this and that.
Yeah.
And how
have you set that up yet?
TiVo now. I'm working on it as we speak. I'm
Yeah, I haven't set it up yet.
Message back from a apparently you have to have an activation code, and it's not on my TiVo, so I sent my TiVo serial number to this Facebook group of guys that work for TiVo, like a beta testing program, and they're going to send me an activation code here, you know, any second.
Let me know how it works.
Cool, I will.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Love the show, Leo.
Thanks, Dave. Keep listening. Thank you. Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, technology in all its many guises. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 8888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also call from outside that area. Just use Skype out to do it. MoviePass, we were talking before the break about MoviePass. Fascinating company. And really, it's an example of, I think, technology. So if you're an entrepreneur and you're thinking, I want to start a business, and but let me think where I can, you know, where I can fit into the existing, you know, economy, where I can find a niche where I could succeed. And of course, all the good ideas are taken, right? You know, the obvious ones. But these guys are smart. MoviePass was started by a very smart guy who has deep pockets, and you know, had worked at, I think he'd worked at Facebook, knew a little bit about the internet and technology. Of course, if you think about it, the idea, well, how can we use the internet with a movie theater? Movie theater, the only way to get in would be somehow dealing with tickets. And there was Fandango's selling tickets. In fact, most movie theaters nowadays, you can buy tickets online. So that's kind of done. He came up with this crazy idea, which on the face of it doesn't make any sense, called MoviePass. You pay as little as $90. I think you have to go to Costco or somewhere to get the $90 movie pass. You pay as little as $90 and you can go as many movies as you want. Boom, that's it. That's crazy talk, right? How does that make any sense at all? Movie pass pays the movie theater. They don't have deals with movie theaters. They pay the movie theater the full ticket price. So if you go to 10 movies, movies are expensive. Let's say it's 10 bucks average price. You're already ahead $10 and they're out $10. How do they make money on you? And it turns out most of the people who have movie passes go to far more than 10 movies a year. They go to a lot of movies. For a while, I've been wondering, and a lot of us have been wondering, how does this make any sense? Well, it makes enough sense, by the way, that there are now competitors. They're not the only one doing this. What are they doing? Well, it's clever. They know a lot about you because you use the MoviePass app on your phone. That means they know where you are. They know what movies you go to. And now they're finally kind of being a little more forthright about their play. I thought it was kind of like a gym, right? Where the gym membership, you know, probably 10% of the people who get a gym membership actually use it fully. And the rest of the people use it sometimes. Majority of people probably never go. So it all works out. And I'm sure they've, you know, mathematicians figuring out how much should we charge? How many people are going to use it? How many people aren't? How much is it going to cost us to provide service? MoviePass is a little more direct. I thought, well, $9.95 a month, it's not going to be hard to figure out that if somebody goes to see two movies a month, you're going to lose money. What are they going to sell data? What are they going to do? Well, part of it is to sell data. But really, Mitch Lowe, who's the CEO, says our idea is it's for marketing. Our long-term vision to build out this idea of a night at the movies and tell you about all these things you can do before and after the movie, how to get there. And what we're really finding out is that movie makers, filmmakers, are very interested because the people who buy this movie pass are serious moviegoers. And it turns out if you promote a movie on movie pass, you're going to increase ticket sales by a significant amount. That's gold for Hollywood, right? Increase a movie's first weekend by 10%, that's a big deal. You pay a little money to movie pass for some marketing, and movie pass is basically telling its users, they're not paying anything for the movie. Hey, here's a great movie. Since you're not paying anything, people are more likely to go see it. Hey, I'll take a chance. So everybody wins. It's very interesting. It's very disruptive. I don't really understand. One of the movie theater chains, the biggest in the country, AMC, says, we're not gonna, we don't like this. We're not going to accept it. I don't understand why. They still get paid the full price. They still get the popcorn sales, the concession sales, where their real profit is. Why would they mind? Maybe somebody listening at AMC could tell me what's wrong with MoviePass from your point of view as a business model. Maybe they wanted to do it. That might be one reason. Do they offer? They may even offer something like that, don't they? Maybe that's the problem. I think one of the most interesting things about technology at this point is the internet's been around for a while. Technology is everywhere. Everybody's got a smartphone now anyway. Most of the consumers who spend money, the ones you want, have smartphones. So now we're watching as clever folks figure out new and interesting ways to use it. It's good for us to pay attention because it's also important to understand what you give up when you buy a movie pass. Besides the $10 a month, you're giving up personal information, which is very valuable. It turns out very valuable to them, right? You're giving them special access to your eyeballs. Attention. Your attention is extremely valuable. It's valuable to me that you're listening to this show. You're paying attention to what I'm saying right now. That's hugely valuable. Without your attention, there's no show. So in effect, by subscribing to MoviePass, you're giving MoviePass a significant amount of attention. They can sell that too. It's very interesting. We'll see what happens. You know, it's also a gamble. Whenever you start a business like this, you're taking a flyer on an idea. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We go to the phones. Thank you for your attention. Bonnie, Riverside, California is next. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi.
Hey, welcome. Thanks for hanging on.
Oh, not a problem. Not a problem. I'm kind of desperate here.
Mm-mm. What's the matter?
Okay.
All right.
I have ESET, Smart Security. I love it. I have never had any kind of intrusion, anything, and that's thanks to you. But something happened the other day. I got a warning saying that it has blocked several attempts from an external intruder.
Okay. Not necessarily a problem. It's if the intruder gets in, that's a problem. So tell me more.
Well, I started looking around, and I have a Netgear router, and so I looked on there to see. We have quite a few electronics.
Did ESET tell you a little more about this, or just say that?
Well, if I look in the home network area, it shows all the devices, and it will tell me that, like on this one, I'm looking at one of the printers, some traffic from this device has been blocked.
Yeah.
Almost all of them say that.
Okay. That's good. So the router does a lot of this, but ESET may be doing additional protection. This is internet background radiation. It's going on all the time. For instance, there's an exploit with some printers that allows somebody to take over your printer and print something. And there are a lot of script kiddies out there who are running scanners. It's a very simple thing to do on their computer and just go around knocking on doors. They don't know who you are or your IP address, but they just do ranges of addresses. And they say, is there a printer there I can mess with? Is there? And they keep looking. And, of course, there are lots of things they're trying to do, not just print pages, but, you know, the latest attack is to turn your router or computer or printer into a Bitcoin miner. The good news is it's been all blocked. It's normal to get attacks. You don't normally see it because normally none of these devices report back to you. You're getting a log of information. As long as it's okay to say intruder attacking. If it says intruders inside, then you worry.
Well, I went through and matching up each item with its IP address and its MAC address.
Wow.
And I came
That's a lot of work.
One that has the correct MAC address, and it happens to be my cell phone.
Yeah.
But it's got the wrong IP address, and then there's like a dozen IP addresses listed.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Really?
Yeah. Your cell phone's IP address changes all the time.
Oh.
Because your cell phone's getting its internet from the cell towers, right? From your cell carrier. Much of the time. And so it's, I think.
Unless I am on Wi-Fi.
Right. But it's sometimes on Wi-Fi and sometimes not.
Right.
I think that that's not something to worry about.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes, okay. One of the things I don't like about running security software is this. It's the same reason doctors say, we're not crazy about these, you know, storefronts where you go down and get full body x-rays. It scares people. You know too much.
I've had this thing for years.
Yeah.
And I've never had it tell me anything.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then all of a sudden it was like, wait a minute, I don't want anybody coming in from outside.
Well, but I presume it would say something different if somebody came in.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So watch for that.
At the home network protection, it shows all of my items here, all of my electronics, and it has... They have
it's meaningless. It's just
exclamation points.
Yeah, this is, by the way, why I no longer recommend security programs on people's computers.
Oh,
but if you enjoy it, well, don't use anything. You haven't learned anything here. Your router actually is protecting you. ESET is just sitting there using up bandwidth and scaring you. And while ESET's fine, I often feel like any program you're running with that kind of deep hooks into your system is itself an opportunity for bad guys if there's a flaw in it. Fine to run it. You've got it. You like it. Go ahead. Keep running it. But you don't need to worry about those reports. Until it says there's somebody in your network, you're okay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I'll talk a little more about security and security software when we come back. Because I really have mixed feelings about this, and you can see why now, right? More of your calls right after this. Our show today brought to you by our great sponsor, IT Pro TV. You know, you hear me talking about IT Pro TV all the time, and for good reason. These guys, I feel a kinship to them. Tim and Don are good friends, and it's an homage, I think, to TWiT. Because we went to NAB, I did a panel on creating your own streaming TV station, basically, and they said, boom, they were IT trainers. They said, boom, a light went off. We should do that. And IT Pro TV was born. Now, of course, it completely surpassed me in every respect. They have 5 active studios. They do 125 hours of live content every week on every aspect of IT. Then those live shows, by the way, they do it just like we do with a live chat and live shows. Those are archived. You get them on demand. They have 3,300 hours of on-demand programming in every area of IT. Security certs from ISC Squared or ITIL or the Certified Ethical Hacker. That's very popular. You can learn how to use Wireshark. You can learn how to support Office. You can learn how to support Windows Server. Windows 10, on and on, Macintosh, every possible subject. Now, if you want to get a job in IT, you can say, okay, what certs do I need? Pick those certs, study those skills. And you can do it easily. You can watch it on your computer, on your phone, Android or iOS. They have a Roku app. They have an Apple TV app, a Fire, Amazon Fire TV app. It's easy. You watch it on your big screen. You can listen in your car. You can watch it at work. Take it with you all the time. And just even almost by osmosis, you're going to learn and learn and learn and get those certs and get that job. If you get the pro version, they even have Transcender practice exams you can take before you take the exam. They have virtual labs. You don't need to have a Windows server to set up and configure a Windows server. And if you go to itpro.tv/techguy, and use the offer code TG30, TG30. You can do a 7-day trial for free. And if you decide to sign up, their monthly plan is 30% off forever for the lifetime of your active subscription. 30% off. You can do the premium plan and get 30% off that as well, bring it down. I think it's $600 a year. That's amazing. I mean, that's much less than a technical school. But you get all the benefits. There's study groups, all sorts of stuff. But that's fun. That's really kind of the most important part of this whole deal. IT Pro TV is fun. They say, what do they call it? Friendly? Here it is. Flexible training, binge-worthy content, ROI proven. Absolutely. itpro.tv/techguy. Don't forget that offer code TG30 for 30% off your subscription for the lifetime of your active subscription. Or get the premium subscription, only $600. But that offer code TG30, don't forget that. itpro.tv/techguy. She's going to be doing the national anthem today, right? Oh, this is Gwen Stefani, of course. It's Pink doing the national anthem. I confuse them. I don't know why. I love Gwen Stefani. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Computer security programs, this has all changed. And I know people are very skeptical when I say this. But if you're running Windows 8 or 10, I'll include 7 even, or a Mac OS computer of a recent vintage, I don't recommend security software. Both operating systems come with their own security software, which is reliable and effective, and all you need. Only 5% of current viruses are detected by an antivirus in the first day or two. That's what's changed, by the way. You know, of course, I used to recommend antiviruses all the time, but that's what's changed. Viruses spread. Malware spreads now. You've heard the term zero day. That means they take 0 days. They're discovered, these flaws, and exploited within 24 hours, far faster than any antivirus company can respond. They don't even know about it. So a security program has some real serious issues in the sense that it gives you a false sense of security. It's not 100% protection. All right, you might say, but that's Leo. I'm still getting whatever, 5%. Yeah, but what's the cost? Security software in your system slows it down, uses up resources, and most importantly, opens up holes. This is something really important. Every single program you put on your computer brings with it the potential for opening a door to a bad guy. If there's a flaw in that program, bad guys will take advantage of it and try to get in your system. So put as few programs on your system as you can. Don't put extra stuff on your system that you don't need or you don't use. Get rid of it. And when I say system, I mean your phone, I mean your laptop, I mean your desktop, I mean any computing device. Don't put additional software that you don't need on there. And what is really to be avoided is system-level software. Software that puts its hooks into the operating system, that checks memory that is not normally available to user programs. And antiviruses are the kings of this. Even though Microsoft has said, again and again, don't do that. They do. And so as a result, we have seen in the last year, 3 or 4 occasions where well-known antiviruses have simply been a gateway to bad guys. Just come on in. Bad guys love antiviruses. Bad guys love antiviruses. They're hoping you're running an antivirus on there. It's a pathway to your deepest roots of your operating system. It doesn't protect you, or it has some limited protection, doesn't fully protect you, opens avenues of attack, slows your system down, uses up memory, and gives you a false sense of security. This is why I don't recommend it. And as within the case of our last caller, her ESET security software was giving her warnings that were scaring her. She spent hours going through all the IP addresses and MAC addresses, figure out what's gone my useless waste of time, waste of energy. Your computers are always being attacked. That's why you should never just put a computer on the open internet. You should always put it behind a router. Almost everybody does. Because if you want to use more than one device on your internet connection, you have to. The good news is, when somebody's attacking you, the only thing they see is the router. And most routers just ignore any traffic they don't understand. They're dumb boxes going, I don't know what you're talking about. What? You want to attack my printer? Forget it. I don't even know what a printer is. They just ignore it. They throw it away. And so they're actually firewalls. They protect your inside network against the outside world. But they're always being attacked. If you could log what's going on in your router, there's internet background radiation from attackers all the time. It's always happening. It's not unusual. It's best not to worry too much about this stuff. You know, we talked yesterday, and I will reiterate, the most important thing, update your software, use strong passwords. Don't install software you don't need. Be very careful where you get your software from. Get it from well-known companies. And this is really true on a smartphone, even more so. And you'll be safe enough. putting additional security software in your system often just makes it less secure, oddly enough. So, and it can scare you for no good reason. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. I know you disagree, some of you, so you can call me and tell me. Coming up, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. We're going to get some photo tips here. Stay right here. So you're buying an A7 R3, Chris Marquardt?
Of course. No. Of course. Is it okay if I plug the Kenya Great Migration software?
Yes. Oh, I wish I could go on that. Oh, my
God.
I know. It was so nice of you to ask us. I am. Oh, we actually entertained canceling our trip to Europe the following week.
No. Europe is definitely beautiful, especially at that time of year.
But Lisa and I both were dying to do exactly. I mean, my God, you're going to see these herds of wildebeest and stuff, right?
Millions of wildebeest and zebras and.
Unbelievable.
There's like giraffe and antelope and hippos and elephants. The big cats, of course.
God, I'm so jealous. Yeah,
it's been high on my list.
I really, seriously, we said, well, we can cancel this cruise. Let's see. Let me look at this. We have tickets for air and everything already, but it's so tempting. Mama, don't take my Kodachrome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know that music means? It means it's time for Chris Marquardt. He's our photo guy. Hosts some great workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com, is a photography podcast creator. His Tips on the Top Floor is, how long have you been doing that? Oh, it must be more than 10 years now.
12 to 13 years. Something in that range.
One of the first photography podcasts, still one of the best. It's good to see you again, Chris. How are you?
It's good to be back. I just spent 7 hours on the Autobahn in Germany in snow.
Going 180 miles an hour.
Not with this weather.
No. So you sent me an invitation, and it broke my heart to have to say no. You are going to do something so exciting this summer. I'm so jealous. Tell us about it.
Well, I wish you could have come, because I get the opportunity to go to Kenya, to Masai Mara National Park, and witness the Great Migration, which is where I think a couple of million wildebeest and zebra cross the desert. And it's this archetypal, this very, very, if you think safari, that's what a safari is. And there's zebra and giraffes and antelopes and elephants and the big cats. And we have like a beautiful Hemingway style camp, our own vehicles, everything. It's a bit of luxury adventure.
You're breaking my heart. Oh, man.
I can take two people. I have opening for two people.
Well, I have a feeling it'll be easy to fill it. It's coming up in August. Is that a once-a-year thing, the Great Migration? It must be twice a year, right?
Well, the migration is pretty much they go in a big circle to find new grounds to graze. So they come through different parts of Tanzania and Kenya. And the place that we are is pretty much one of the best spots to be. Yeah.
It was high on my list,
and I'm so happy I can do this.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, we have a bad habit of planning our vacations a year ahead of time.
Plan, otherwise you don't do them.
Right. And I kind of look forward to it. But man, that's the trip of a lifetime.
might do one more next year. We'll see.
Okay. Well, just tell me, give me some advance warning, and I won't book anything for next year.
this one just popped up for me. I was not prepared for that.
So plus, I'd love to spend
things
time.
Just come along. You know?
Is Monica coming? I'd love to spend time with the two of you.
No, just me
you.
At this time.
Wow.
But I'll do my best for next time.
Next time, a couple that we would. Just love to go. So let's talk photography. Chris is always good here for inspiration, helping us get better images, even with a camera phone. What do you got for us today?
Well, it is very camera phone related this time, and I've again brought three apps that I like. They are somewhat photography related. They're more on the fun side, but every now and then you should have fun with your photos. And I just like playing with photos sometimes. One is a selfie-specific app. It's called Sticky AI. And what it does is you take a selfie and it cuts you out. So it takes the background out automatically. It then can add a white border around it.
It doesn't cut you out. It cuts the background out.
It cuts the background out.
I'd like to see more selfies without people in them. All right.
You can put text on that. You can put a white border around you. And then you can just send it to apps like like Messenger, Telegram, Skype, and so on. It's available for iOS, Android, and it's amazing how much fun I had with this little app. Or you can combine it if you're on iOS. You can combine it with another software that's called Adhesive, which creates iMessage stickers. So you can put yourself in iMessage and then put yourself on other people's photos.
Oh, that sounds fun. I like that. All right, downloading both of those now. All right.
Well, you're gonna download the next one too. It's GIF Toaster. It's, by the way, it's GIF, not GIF, right? Or is it?
I say, you know what I do? Because I don't want to be stuck. I say it both ways. Sometimes I say GIF, sometimes I say GIF. because it's such a crazy battle. I don't know. What do you say, GIF?
So, I say GIF.
Yeah, because it's short for graphics interchange format. It's a key. But doesn't the guy who invented it, didn't he say it's GIF?
I think so, but hey, you put a T at the end, it's GIFT. It's not pronounced GIFT. So anyway, GIFT Toaster. That's only for iOS, though. It's a GIF-related app. It makes GIFs out of videos, live photos, bursts, time lapses, panoramas, and then you get to send them off or save them. Another one that is also available for Android that's also GIF-related that lets you make GIFs and put text on them and put graphics on them is Giphy Cam, which is a nice one too. That's available for both platforms. But my iOS GIF app of choice right now is GIF Toaster. Like, you take one of these live photos that have a bit of motion in them, but then you put them into a GIF, and then when you share them to others, they can immediately see those, no matter what platform they're on.
You know, I hate the Apple Store search. I can never find anything. GIF Hoster, is that what it is?
GIF Toaster. Toaster.
Toaster. Oh.
Toaster.
Well, that's a user.
The thing with the bread.
Like bread. GIF Toaster.
Yeah.
Oh. That's also, is that available on Android as well?
No, but no. The one GIF app that is great on Android is Giphy Cam.
Giphy Cam.
G-I-P-H-Y
okay.
Cam.
Okay.
Which does a lot of fun things. Okay. And now, here's the last one, which I talked about with my co-host on the Future of Photography recently. When we were talking about glitch art. Have you ever heard of glitch art?
No. It's like with it and hip. I don't know any of this
stuff. Photos that look like there was some sort of a glitch, a digital glitch, an analog glitch, something broke. And who doesn't like to destroy a few photos every now and then? Go a bit creative and use so-called glitch filters. There's filters. There's an app called Decimate, D-E-C-I-M, and then the number 8. And you get to combine a whole bunch of different filters. They have weird names like Graboid or Glass Dagger or Brain Feeder. And they do things with photos that look very analog sometimes and that look like, well, they look quite artful, to be honest. And
they look like Matt's Headroom. Did you have
some
Max
of them
Headroom
look like
Germany?
Max Headroom?
Yeah.
Well, no. Well, yeah. I think a bit of that. But you can press different random buttons there. You can combine multiple filters. You have a per filter set of parameters, so you can change those. You can randomize those, and then you can apply them to still photos, but you can also live preview them, and that's just fun to do that from now.
The first few are free with in-app purchases, as always. This one's 99
cents,
which is nice because I would rather pay 99 cents up front than, I bought an app, which I don't recommend, a black and white filter, because I like black and white, called Carbon, $20 later to get all the filters, and I didn't like any of them.
You should try Decimate. Just destroy a few photos.
I have installed every single one. Every single one of your apps here on my iPhone. Nice.
Well, you'll have fun playing with those. Now, I want to see some sticky AI, some selfies.
That sticky AI is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Now, I know we went fast, and don't worry. Don't freak out. I know there are people pulling over right now and pulling out a pad of paper. It's okay. It's all going to be on the website, techguylabs.com. We'll put links to all of these. So you could just click them and download and make it much easier for you, techguylabs.com. We'll also put a link to Chris Marquardt, discoverthetopfloor.com. And if I go to discoverthetopfloor.com, if somebody wants to go on that Masamurai.
There's a big yellow box right on the front page.
Okay.
It's hard to miss. It's hard to miss.
There's only two openings?
At this point, two openings, yes. This is super exclusive. We're... there are a few more people. It's not just two, but that's all I will be allowed to bring at this point. So
are there other photographers on this too?
Oh yeah, it's completely photography based. It is about photography. Oh, we have vehicles, man. There, private vehicles. Everyone gets their own row in a vehicle, so you don't have to like elbow your way through to the window.
I wanna go. Okay. All right. Thank you, Chris. And by the way, we have an assignment. Don't forget. What's our assignment?
Yes, we do.
I forgot.
The current assignment is repeat.
Repeat. Repeat.
And I think it's another 1 or 2 weeks until we are going to review.
Take a picture illustrating, and by the way, it could be with any camera, word or concept repeat. Upload it to Flickr, put the tag repeat in there, and then submit it to our tech guy group. Chris will review them in a few weeks. Thank you, Chris.
Absolutely.
And then Burke sent me a picture of you on the this is you on the Autobahn today.
Well, that was me on the passenger seat, luckily. And that's, by the way, Gift Hoster. I used a live photo and I put it through Gift Hoster, so that's a gift.
Ah, nice. And you know what's cool? It doesn't obviously repeat. I thought it was
That's
continuous.
Live photos, though. That's a loop from live photos that does the repetition. From the repetition that looks nice.
The Apple Live Photos app?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Have you never tried this? If you take a live photo...
Yeah.
Do that right now. Take a live photo, enable in the camera the live photo mode.
Yeah.
Just this little concentric circle
it's
on the top.
On. Yeah.
Take a photo of something that moves.
Okay. Doing it. Yeah.
Okay. Now go to edit the photo.
Okay.
And swipe up.
Go to edit. Okay. So here we're doing this now. That was you. And if I press and hold it, it shows you waving. Okay.
Okay. Now swipe
press
up.
Edit.
On the photo.
Oh,
no.
Oh, don't press edit. Just swipe up.
Swipe up.
Oh, loop.
And now select loop.
Oh, it's making a loop. Ah, there's a little dissolve in there, but on your snow thing, you don't see the dissolve.
Swipe up again and choose bounce.
Bounce. That's back and forth.
Exactly. And you can make those into GIFs with the GIF toaster.
How did I not know this?
I thought you knew this.
I probably knew it and forgot it.
This long exposure thing, by the way, is if you shoot water, you will get like a blurred water
effect. Oh, nice. Nice.
Very cool. Very beautiful.
Nice. You know, I mostly take pictures with the Pixel 2 because I like the camera better, but it doesn't have this particular feature on it. So I'm going to have to start doing more iPhone. So tell me again, I got Sticky, forget carbon.
Sticky AI.
Yep, Sticky
that's the
AI.
One. Adhesive.
I got to get this other one. What is it called? Adhesive?
Adhesive.
Adhesive. Just
adhesive. Which makes iMessage stickers out of every photo. Any photo you like.
Oh. Create stickers for iMessage. Yep. Okay. 99 cents. So now I could do a selfie and make it a sticker.
And put it into adhesive and then you can stick your own bug on iMessages.
I'm going to make a little folder of these things here so I can do this whole production. So there's the sticky. So let me do a sticky.
Yeah, do a sticky.
Sticky would like to access the camera. Okay. Swipe down.
Face.
Oh, no. First, before I have to do that, I have to do... sticky's the one, right?
Oh, the sticky is fine.
Okay. All right, that's the sticky.
Hopefully it can handle the headphones. But
look at that.
Not too well.
The headphones. Okay, so let's not do that. Let's take off the headphones. All right. Take it. Hold to make a GIF. So it's... Oh, you can animate this as well.
Now you're getting an animation.
Yeah, but see, there's something about the side of my head it doesn't like.
It's probably the studio lighting that trips it.
Can you fix this or is it just... You just...
You can. I think you can swipe on it.
Maybe, yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Zoom in.
That's amazing, though, that can do that. Wow.
Well, or you get a nicely, weirdly shaped head there, but that's okay.
Yeah, I have it was the microphone. Never mind. Let me do it without the microphone.
There we go.
Yeah, that's better. All right. Share data. Yeah, of course, it's got a little light there. So, but that one's pretty good. Okay.
So give it a wide border. Tap on the photo.
Yeah. Ah!
Tap again.
Oh, this is
so
fun.
You have a few filters there.
Yeah. Okay.
And tap the person on the right top, the third from the from the top.
That's the white border.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now save it to your camera roll.
Okay. Save to
Oh, if you tap the background, it changes the color of the background.
Do I not want that? I want it transparent, don't I?
If you want to make a nice little sticker, then you go transparent.
Slow down, Leah.
Slow.
I got to do a show. I'll talk to you later, Chris. Thank you.
Talk to you. Take care.
Now, this is pink. She will be singing the national anthem at the Super Bowl today. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Line two is Noel in Huntington Beach, California. Hi, Noel.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. Leo, I hope we got a simple question for you. I'm just in the process of starting a business. We're getting phones put in, and I want to use VoIP, but I don't know what speed of internet we need to have if we're using VoIP, or if we can use it wirelessly and not Ethernet connected or not.
You can. The issue with VoIP, Voice Over Internet Protocol, instead of using the phone line, it's going to use your internet connection. We do that here at our office with a company that was a sponsor called Ring Central, but there are a lot of companies that do this. I would figure out which company you're going to use and ask them what their specs are. But remember, VoIP doesn't take a lot of bandwidth. It's not so much, because it's just voice. It's not so much the bandwidth, it's consistency and ping time that matter. So latency, for instance, is a bad thing. Latency is, and you'll see this, you know, when you're watching the news networks and they're talking to somebody on a satellite. The anchor says, "So, Joe, what's the situation there in Moscow?" 1, 2, 3, 4. "Oh, I'm here in Moscow." There's a delay. That's called latency. And in the case of a satellite phone, and you've experienced this, I'm sure, if you sound like you might be from the UK, if you ever call home, because it has to go all the way up to the satellite and all the way down. The amount of time that takes is the latency. VoIP has a latency issue as well. Phone lines tend to be fairly low latency, but the internet can get in the way, and so latency can go up and down. You've heard this on Skype sometimes, where there's delay in the Skype call. So that's one issue that happens with VoIP. Another issue that happens with VoIP is, and again, it's not speed. Speed impacts the quality, but the quality of phone calls is fairly low. It doesn't take a lot of bandwidth. So it's not speed, it's consistency that's important. And if, for instance, a packet, you know, remember all the data in this voice call is sent in little bits of data called a packet. Every packet, you know, is sent across the internet from my phone to yours. By the way, nowadays, almost every call you make has some VoIP component. You might be over a regular telephone line to the central office, but then it routes it through the internet sometimes. Usually not a public internet, but it's still VoIP. So the public internet can sometimes do bad things to those packets. A packet can get lost along the way, or a packet can get delayed along the way. So when a packet gets lost, you've heard this when you use Skype or any VoIP solution, you get a dropout. When a packet gets delayed, that increases the latency because this stream has to be in real time. I'm talking in real time. The packets have to be in order. If packet 3 comes after packet 4, well, in effect, the stream is going to say, I'm on number 2. I don't see 3. I see 4. I'm waiting. And then when 2 comes in, it will put it back in order and play it. That's easy to fix in streaming video and audio. That's why you have a buffer. But you don't have buffering in a VoIP call. So generally what will happen, it'll wait a millisecond, but it'll eventually drop that packet. And so you'll get little dropouts. Sometimes Skype and other programs will try to fill in gaps. Instead of having a blank space where the missing packet is, they'll repeat this previous packet. And you've heard this on Skype where it'll sound like you're singing. You'll be talking along, and then there'll be an extended sound, and that's it's filling up the voices. So these are all problems that happen. Most of them not due to low bandwidth. If you have a decent internet connection, you know, even a few megabits, that's sufficient. It's the consistency. So, and remember, other people in the office are also using that bandwidth.
Yeah. So we're shopping around for internet providers at the moment, and we have one that gives us a rate, and I don't really quite understand this, of 10/100.
But that's the speed. The
service has been atrocious.
Yeah. So first, there's a few things you're looking for is good customer service. But most importantly, you're going to look for something that's called business class. Usually that means you're going to get something called an SLA, which is an agreement about the quality of service they're going to give you.
Okay.
And that's the key.
It'll cover the latency issue, too.
Yes. It'll cover latency. It'll cover drift. It'll cover jitter. These are all terms that relate to the effectively inconsistency of the stream. And so generally when you get business class service from any internet provider, what you're telling them is, I'm using it for VoIP primarily.
Yeah.
So you need to have enough, you need to have enough bandwidth for the call, but really more enough bandwidth to have everybody in the office who's using the internet get all the internet they need and have enough left over for the call. That's really more like it. Most providers in your router will offer QoS, quality of service, that will prioritize VoIP. So ask about that, because
right.
then, you know, because, you know, you can wait for that email to come in. You can't wait for that packet to come in when you're talking to somebody.
Right. And if we had 2 7 megabit lines coming in, would that make a difference to that or not?
Well, what I would do is dedicate one to VoIP.
Okay.
That if you have, that's the best solution. If that yeah. line is just VoIP, as long as it doesn't have significant latency, jitter, things like that, you're going to have a great sounding call. 7's plenty.
Okay. And on the factory side, then, for the way the phones connect, would that still work just as well if it's operated Wi-Fi, or is it best as it?
Wi-Fi adds problems. It adds latency. And Wi-Fi has a very odd problem that people don't know about, but makes it terrible for VoIP. Wi-Fi is it's a collision-driven network. So if you have multiple people conversing, Wi-Fi is polite, and it will stop. One of the streams will stop and wait a random amount of time so the other guy can talk. That's terrible for VoIP, because if you're on a VoIP call and then somebody fires up their browser, they're asking for data from the Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi says, okay, hold on. It holds the call, gives them the data, and then goes back to the call. So Wi-Fi, if you can avoid it, is to be avoided. It will add issues.
That helps hugely. Thank you.
Yeah, it helps to understand what the issues are, right? And now when you go to a provider, you can say, here's, you know, we're going to do VoIP. That should be enough. But if they're not a great provider, they may need to give them a little more information.
I know you said that you've used RingCentral there. And,
yeah, we like RingCentral a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
We currently use it. And by the way, you didn't know it, but this call is a VoIP call. Even though you're calling, even if you call from a landline, the way it gets into my phone system is over the internet through VoIP.
And am I right to understand if you have somebody working from a home opposite side of the country and they on the same VoIP system, you just transfer calls, it's as if they're in the office by you?
Yes. That's one of the – so that's not really related to VoIP. That's related to what's changed completely in switching, which is instead of physical switches, they're digital switches. And the new kind of way of packet switch networks means you really have amazing flexibility. And RingCentral offers that. You can call one number – say, I want line 7, and that could be in New York, and line 8 could be in Puerto Rico. And so these are virtual networks at this point, and that's thanks to data switching.
Great. Thank you very much. I
you're
think
welcome.
You've answered my question.
Good. Well, I appreciate it. It's a complicated subject, but nowadays I think most businesses are probably not putting in landlines. Landlines have some real advantages, but cost is high, and more importantly, it doesn't have the flexibility of these new digital routing systems. You don't need big switches anymore. Used to be, remember, you maybe this is so old nobody remembers it, but you used to get a PBX system for your office, right? You know, the receptionist would have a big phone with a lot of buttons. You'd have a PBX, and there'd be a big box in the basement that was doing all the switching. This is all done virtually now in software over the internet. Hey, our Tech Guy show brought to you today by our great sponsor. They've been so great for us this year, last year too. Quicken Loans, great lender too. I think a lot of people really have a fondness for Quicken Loans. If you look at their website, you'll see they have 8 years in a row, number one in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. That's pretty good. Number one means people really like what you're doing. They're also number one in mortgage servicing, so they got completely covered. And they won a soft spot in my heart because they are very tech-focused, right? They realized, for instance, the mortgage approval process was really stuck in the last century. Last century, stuck in the 19th century. You had to go to a bank, and then you had to go to, you know, find your bank statements from 2 years ago or your pay stubs, go up in the attic, call the bank. It was just a pain in the butt. And because of all that, it would take months. Well, not always months. Took us more than a month to get our last loan last time we bought a house from that big bank, you know. They kept coming back and saying, we want more, we want more, we want more. And it was hard to get all these documents. We went on vacation. We had to get Lisa's sister to call and fax, and it was just crazy. Next time, it's going to be Rocket Mortgage for me. That's the completely online mortgage approval process from Quicken Loans. You do it on your phone, your computer, your tablet. Just go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. In fact, go right now and sign up. You don't have to apply for a loan, but just get ready. So the next time you're at an open house, you just pull out your phone. You go, boop, 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 boop. Yes, we want to buy this house. You can answer all. You don't have to get any paperwork because it's going to ask you name, address, birth date, I think social. And that's, you know, stuff you know in your head. You answer those questions. And then they say, okay, because they have trusted partnerships with all the financial institutions, they say, okay, we have your permission to get your credit report, to talk to your bank, all that stuff. And you say yes. They do it. It's all electronic. You say yes. And literally, they crunch the numbers in minutes. Like, they come back to you almost instantly and say, okay, guess what? Based on your income, assets, and credits, you qualify for these loans. Which one would you like? You choose the rate, the term. You choose the down payment. They go, okay, you're approved. That took a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes tops. Depends how fast you type. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. It's amazing. You could do it at an open house. And you go to the realtor and say, we're approved. They love that. By the way, realtors, if you're making an offer and you are pre-approved for the loan, you go right to the front of the line. The only person that can beat you is somebody paying cash, like out of suitcases. That's no. You go right to the front of the line. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Apply simply. Take seconds. Understand fully. There's no mystery. You know exactly what's happening every step of the way. And then mortgage confidently because you're choosing the loan that's right for you from rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. From now on, next time you're going to buy, I didn't even mention refis. This is the time to refi because interest rates are absolutely going up. The Fed's already said so. So now's the time. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. At least check it out. See what you can get. I bet you'll be surprised. Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches. You know, all that technology that's changing our lives. 8888 Ask Leo. Sounds like a hype. The technology that's changing our lives. Next. No, it is really changing our lives, though, isn't it? I mean, it's subtle and it's slow, but if you think about what life was like before ATMs, before email, before you had a computer in your pocket that was always connected to the internet, even facts, you know, even... You used to have debates over facts. No, Arnold Palmer retired at the age of 72. He definitely did. No, I played in the Masters at 73. Now, in the old days, pre-internet, you'd have to go to the library, find a book, and look it up to solve that debate. Now, it's not you ask Siri or you ask Google or you ask Amazon, and boom, the answer's done. There's no questions anymore. Everything's available instantly. It's kind of cool. But it's subtle, right? So you forget how we used to have to go to the library to get this stuff. Or maybe you had an encyclopedia. I keep, just for old time's sake, I keep a World Book Encyclopedia in my office. And I just look at it. When I grew up as a kid, you know, you had to have one of those because that's, you know, you had to have a reference work so you could answer some questions anyway. You know, we'd be at the dinner table having an argument. Dad would say, well, go look it up and go get the World Book. Look it up in your encyclopedia, your 26-volume encyclopedia of the world. Those businesses are gone. There's no World Book anymore. I guess Britannica kind of is around, but it's more of a website, isn't it? And do you really need a separate Britannica website? You've got Google. Of course, now the internet facts mean something else. I mean, There are facts. There are alternative facts. There are fake facts. There are unreal facts. There are real facts. There are all kinds of facts. So now we have a different challenge. And that's what happens, isn't it? The new technologies change things. They don't eliminate the challenges. They just change the challenges. So now it's no longer difficult to get facts. It's difficult to determine if a fact is true because you have so many sources. And I don't know if education is catching up with this. For a long time, education still taught you how to research facts. Right? You'd go to school and you'd learn how to use the library and write a bibliography. You still need to write a bibliography, I guess. But the new education would be not only how to use the internet to find what you want. Okay, that takes about 3 seconds. But then how to determine if the source you're using is any good. That's what we need to learn. And the critical thinking to not just assume that everything you read is true. Does that make sense? That doesn't make sense. Let me see if I can find another source. Let me see if I can figure out if that's true or not. We need to learn that. That's really important. So that's what we talk about in the show, how technology is changing our lives. And if you want to join it, the conversation, easy. You can use the phone. That feels a little out of date. That's kind of last century. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Do you notice if you spend less time or more time on the phone? Some of us spend very little time. I'm one of them. I never liked using the phone ever. I grew up at exactly the right time because now I don't have to. I never liked making phone calls, but now I can text, I can email. But somebody once said, the future's already here. It's just not evenly distributed. And I think that's exactly what you see a little bit and what we see on the show a little bit. It's William, the great science fiction author, William Gibson. The future is already here. It's just not evenly distributed. So some of us don't use the phone to make phone calls anymore. For some of us, the smartphone is not a phone at all. It's an internet-connected device. And you probably know people, maybe you are one of them, who love making phone calls, live on the phone still. I think back to the movie. Remember the movie Bye Bye Birdie? When was that? When did that come out? The 50s? There's a great scene in there where they're all on the phone and it's teenagers wrapped around, the cords all wrapped around them. They're on the phone. You know, the girl and her pedal pushers, you know, kicking her heels as she's talking to her friend on the phone for hours and hours. You remember that? If you're of a certain age, you remember mom getting on the phone. Get off the line. I'm expecting a call. And if you were really, you know, affluent, maybe you'd get your own phone line and your own phone in your own room. Wow. Wow, that was a fancy person. Maybe a princess phone. That was a fancy person. Kids stay connected. Yes, they sure do. But they're often, they've got Skype running. I see kids, you know, teenagers now, they're doing their homework on their laptop. They've got a Skype window open with their other friends, four or five of them in the window, doing their homework. They're kind of like they're studying together, but they're all in different places. Maybe they also have a messenger window open, a text window open, and they're typing messages all at the same time. Probably they got the TV on too, right? No, I'm sorry. Nobody watches TV. YouTube. They had YouTube running in the background. That's where their music's coming from. So that's what the show's about. It's the changing landscape. People are the same. People haven't changed much. But what we do has changed a lot. And what we need to know has changed even more. That's kind of what we talk about. 888-ASK-LEO. Ray's on the line from Illinois. Hello, Ray.
Hey, you spoke to my mom a few times. I'm always in the chat room. Shouldn't recognize me.
Well, I don't know your chat handle, Ray.
You know me under Raymond J. Toes.
Oh, hi, Raymond J. Toe. You've been a member of our chat room for 100 years.
You say.
It's great to talk to you.
I have a question. I'm at Liberty University online trying to get my ESCO hacker, but they put me in the BS of network.
Yeah. So this is what I was talking about, how education maybe hasn't quite caught up with what's really going on. Of course it hasn't. It moves slower. Everything moves slower than technology, right?
True.
Yeah.
My mom bought me for Christmas a 9.7 iPad 5th gen. They used the number system. The school uses Safe Assign. If I use that number, so I put it in the format Apple wants, and I'll get flagged. We use a Microsoft Excel worksheet. What else is there besides numbers that will not flag me as being Apple format that I could use?
Interesting. I think numbers would work, but you've got to tell numbers what it is you're entering. It's not just a standard integer, I guess. What are those numbers? Are they IP addresses? What are you entering in?
No, it's Excel. It's
but what's
it's
the
business class, what? But it's they give a predefined template and we're supposed to follow.
Ah, so it's not just the data, it's also the formulae.
Right, .xlsx.
Yeah.
Microsoft
so,
Excel.
Yeah.
I can't lose that.
Here's format, the good news. Otherwise. Guess what? Microsoft makes Excel available on the iPad. Free.
Oh, I didn't know that. I get 360 with our school.
Yeah. Okay. All of Microsoft. I would say the best touch versions of Microsoft Office are on the iPad. A lot of Windows people don't like that.
Is there anything besides that one if that doesn't work?
It should work. It should understand Microsoft formulas. It's not a bad idea to learn the translation, I guess, because you'll understand better the underlying technology. But, no, I would just get Microsoft Excel on the App Store. You may need an Office 365 subscription ultimately, but the student subscriptions are very cheap. You can also use it on the web, by the way, and you can use it on the iPad on the web. And that is free forever. That's the Office Online app. So there's two different ways you can run Excel on your iPad, and you should be able to just paste those formulas, those cells, right in. There's also Google Spreadsheets, but I think that's even less compatible with Excel than Apple's numbers. So, Raymond, nice to talk to you. Great going on school. Keep up the good work. And you have a nice mom to get you that iPad. And just I think what you need that to do now is get the student edition of Office 365, and that'll give you a very nice, full-fledged Microsoft Excel on the iPad. It should be completely compatible with desktop Excel, and it'll look great, and it's touch-first and all of that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. As I said, 888-827-5536. Everything we talk about is always on the website, so you don't have to write anything down, and it's free, techguylabs.com. I love Python programming. It's a huge future for it, Mario. It's used widely. NASA uses it. Google uses it. But it's also a good language to start with, to learn, and you can then move from Python to almost any language. So, yes, study your Python. Personally, this has been a multi-year project. I learned to program, as most people of my generation, the wrong way, which is using BASIC and just banging on it until it worked. And you don't learn good habits that way at all. And that's kind of how I learned to program. And I've written a lot of software. I wrote a lot more when I was younger in assembly language and C. I love C. But as a kind of a hobby, I've always loved to program. I've always written little programs in a variety of languages, Perl and Python. Did a bunch of Python stuff, mostly personal stuff. You know, just quick little tools, things like that. But I've been always thinking, I gotta learn it right. I gotta unlearn everything and start from scratch. And so I've been, I periodically bring this, you know, open the book up and start all over again. But there are two books that if I were learning to program today, I would probably start with, if you want to learn it rigorously. Now, this is probably impractical because we're talking a year or two of study involved. And nobody got time for that. But I'm going to say it anyway in case you do, or if you're 14 and you have lots of time, you know, young person, start with this, How to Design Programs, colloquially called HTDP. And by the way, this is online and it's free. And when you go to htdp.org, you can get the book, but you can also get the environment they teach with, which is called Dr. Racket. And don't tell anybody. But you're learning basically Lisp. Dr. Racket is especially designed. Racket is a Lisp-like language. It was originally called Scheme. But it is really good. Really good. Useful, but not, but better as maybe a didactic language. Thing is, you're going to learn, the skills you're going to learn are absolutely applicable everywhere else. So this is a great book, HTDP, to learn how to program. And it's free, and the Dr. Racket is free, and it's everywhere. Linux, Windows, and Mac. Easy to install. You can put it anywhere. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Isaac on the line from Ontario, Canada. Hello, Isaac.
Hey.
Hey.
Hello.
Hey.
You hear me?
Yeah.
Hi.
How you doing? How old are you, Isaac?
Oh, I'm 14.
We've talked before, right?
Yes. We talked a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my question is for you. I have a 2015 MacBook Pro.
Oh, nice. That's the one, by the way. I went back to my 2015 because I got the MacBook Pro with a touch bar, yeah. And I hated it so much. I mostly hated that keyboard so much. I went back to my old 2015, and it's great. Nice keyboard. It's plenty fast enough still. Good. It's a great laptop. That's the last great MacBook Pro.
They don't sell it anymore, though.
I think they do, believe it or not, still sell the 2015. But it's even I'm not alone in this. Marco Arment, who's a great Macintosh programmer, he wrote a whole blog post saying the last great MacBook was the 2015 MacBook Pro. And I agree.
Yeah. Anyways, so I have the 13-inch, and it's I called Apple because I had a problem with my screen. The anti-reflective coating was kind of scratching out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they actually said they would replace it for free.
Wow. It's out of warranty, but they still said they'd fix it.
Yeah. They said it's like covered from like a recall.
There you go. So they had a problem and they knew it.
Yeah.
Good.
It's like, I Googled it too. I saw like all the Retina MacBooks were covered.
Good. I should bring mine in.
Yeah, you can actually
now,
see the outline.
Had you been cleaning it with a screen cleaner?
Yeah, I use Whoosh.
Whoosh. It's not ammonia based, right? It's not alcohol based.
Yeah, it's
four screens. Okay, yeah. Because that's one thing that can happen with these anti-glare coatings is ammonia or alcohol. Windex, the thing you use on the windows normally, don't use that on any screen, not a TV, not a computer, because it'll strip off the coating. All right, so you took good care of it. It wasn't your fault. It was just that Apple had a defect.
No, I didn't take too good care of it.
Well, but I think the fact that they're replacing it tells me. What did you do you didn't scrape it with a razor or something, did you?
No. But what it caused was you can actually see the outline of the trackpad.
Yeah, because it hits it. It hits it when you close it.
Yeah.
This is a known problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they're willing to replace it for free.
Good. But now you don't want it to happen again, do you?
Yeah. That's exactly
so when you're there, ask them, and they will give you, if they don't, you can buy it cheaply, a microfiber cloth that's the size of the keyboard trackpad, the bottom part. And whenever you close your laptop, you put that micro... When you actually bought the laptop, you probably don't remember, it came with a little microfiber cloth protecting it. Now, this is bad design on Apple's part because those keys are striking the screen, and they shouldn't. But that's why Apple's taking responsibility. Good on them. But it's not going to change the fundamental design of the 2015 MacBook. It's still going to strike the screen. So you want to have something in between. It's called a microfiber cloth. You can also use it to clean the screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's a polyester. It's not a natural fiber. But it's very soft. You don't want to clean screens with paper towels. They're abrasive.
Yeah.
Even regular cotton towels might be too abrasive. These microfiber cloths are the best way to clean a screen. So keep that, whenever you close your laptop, keep that microfiber cloth there. Use your Whoosh. Don't let it drip into the guts of the computer. Best way to do it is Whoosh the microfiber cloth and then wipe the screen.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't have any problems with it from now on.
Yeah. So I was wondering, do you recommend any screen protectors? Like,
I do not. I know people who use them. Generally, it degrades the screen quality.
Okay.
You've got a screen protector. Just protect it. You've got that coating, the anti-glare coating. The most common use for screen protectors is to keep people from looking over your shoulder. So if you fly a lot, modern screens are good. You can see them. The seatmate can see what you're doing. And sometimes people want privacy. So they get polarized screen filters that keep people from looking over your shoulder. Yeah. But I don't recommend a screen protector. I do recommend that microfiber cloth. That is a screen protector. But it's a nice one because it only uses it when you're not looking at the screen. When you're looking at the screen, you can see it clearly now.
Yeah. My only problem with that is that I have to, if I pull it out every time I use it, and then I have to put it back.
You have to remember.
Mm-hmm.
You have to remember to use it. Yeah, you could get, so if you search, you can find screen protectors for exactly that size screen, a 13-inch 2015 mm-hmm. MacBook Pro. They're easy to put on. I think they degraded a little bit, but it's not a touch screen, so it's not going to hurt its performance. It's just the image quality won't be as good. But if you feel better doing that, go ahead and do that. I'd still get the microfiber just in case. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah. I don't have any particular brand recommendations. I don't know, Isaac, which ones are best or anything because I don't use them, but they're easy to find. Anybody in the chat room have a good screen protector? MacBook Pro screen protector. A lot of people use them on smartphones. Yeah, there's a bunch, the Moshi iVisor Pro anti-glare. There's a bunch of them. Oh, that's an interesting one. That has a frame. That's probably a good way to do it. This is the 15-inch, but they, I'm sure, have a 13-inch. Yes, they do. The Moshi Visor. A little pricey. That's $50. That seems like a lot to pay. Here's a two-pack for $13.59. There you go. It just peels off and on. That's probably fine. Get the one for your model, obviously. Oh, ScreenGuard foam cleaning spray. That's an interesting idea. I can't imagine it. I mean, you don't want to leave. Oh, I use this. We use this. We love this stuff. As seen on Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Look at it. It says it right there. They sent us, and the only reason we use it is they sent us two cases years ago, back when we were in the cottage, and we used it forever. Love it. I think we still have some. Micro Center has inexpensive ones. Where can I get more of this? I love this stuff. It foams up, which is nice. $20. Wow, I had no idea. Sold from and sold by, ships from and sold by, in the hands of professionals. That's funny. I have some microfiber knickers as well. So I was saying, okay, so once you go through HTTP, and if you go through that, by the way, you are learning modern programming skills like test-driven design. You're learning a functional language, which is kind of more and more increasingly, I think, people are moving in that direction because functional languages, as opposed to the current, like C is an imperative language, functional languages are much safer. And frankly, once you learn them, much more powerful. Lisp is amazing. Lisp basically is a language that lets you generate domain-specific languages easily, so that you can write a language for what you're working in. It's just, anyway, once you do HTTP, it's free. Then you're going to go to another free one called SICP, the Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programs, or sometimes called the Abelson and Sussman book. And I own both of these in hardcover, but they're very expensive in hardcover. Use the online versions. Let me see. Is it SICP.org? Nope. SICP seems to have fallen off the face of the earth. MIT Press. There you go. This one. And this is also a Lisp book, but you can use Racket with it. And it's completely online. I think you can continue with your Dr. Racket. I think this is also supports Dr. Racket. They may call it PLT Scheme or some of one of the older names. Don't start with SICP, although if you're already an accomplished programmer, you could easily do that. So if you already know how to program, maybe do SICP. This used to be the MIT Computing 101 course. It is not Justin Timberlake's first time on the Super Bowl halftime stage, is it? We all remember many years ago when he and Janet Jackson appeared on the stage, which ended up costing them millions in FCC fines. Ask your parents, kids. 88888, ask Leo the phone number. Line 4, John in Notre Dame. Hello, John.
Hey, how you doing there, Leo?
I am great. How are you?
Man, we're doing great here in Notre Dame country.
I know, the greatest, the fighting Irish.
Oh, my son's a big fan of yours. He wants to say hi here.
Hi.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, what's your name?
Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy. Are you? Do you like computers?
Yes.
Do you play video games or watch YouTube? What do you do?
I usually go on YouTube and watch a lot of videos.
Yeah, what's your favorite? Is it Phineas and Ferb?
What's your favorite video? Tell them.
Sometimes I forget.
Ah. Nice. Well, it's nice to meet you. Thank you. Could you put Dad back on the line?
Yep, I'm right here.
How old is he?
He's a third grader. He's second grader. I'm sorry.
Second grader. Dad. Oh, you're getting a funny look right now from Mom. Does he have an iPad? Does he have an iPad?
He has a Samsung Galaxy Tab right now.
And is he able to use it?
Oh, he loves it. He uses it like mad crazy.
It's kind of interesting how his generation, I mean, it's just they don't have to be taught how to use it, do they? They just use it.
They just go right to it.
I see literally nonverbal kids, like under one, who know how to navigate to Netflix on an iPad.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I've seen it too.
It's crazy. Anyway, what can I do for you?
Okay, so we're calling about TV screen size. We are in a new townhome, and we're sitting about 11 feet away from a 43-inch screen right now.
Okay, now, as I hope your wife's listening. That is terrible, John.
Okay.
Terrible. Unacceptable. I'm sure she likes it, but I think you need to explain to her that the problem is you're so far away and that screen is so small. In fact, you could do this. You could hold up probably a credit card, maybe your smartphone, and block the screen from where you're sitting.
Yes. For sure.
That's terrible.
We lived in a smaller place and we moved into a larger place. So we're just trying to get some recommendations there on screen size.
Well, I'm gonna put on the website. There is now Dolby. The people who do the Dolby Vision and sound and all that stuff, they have some recommendations, which I think are maybe a little extreme. But I'm gonna send you to a site called RTings, short I guess for ratings, where they have a very handy to use TV size to distance calculator. And why? And so you can say, so you're gonna be sitting 11 feet away.
Yeah, 11 feet.
Okay. On this calculator, 11 feet, they say you should get the biggest TV you can buy, which is 75 inches. And the reason you're sitting pretty far away. And the reason being, you don't want the screen to be credit card size. You want it to look somewhat like a movie. Maybe in your case, you'll be sitting in the back row of the theater, but at least it'll be big enough that you can see the details on the screen. So at that distance, really, it's the biggest you can afford, honestly. If you know, as you get closer, you can make it smaller. But the theory is kind of you don't want it to feel. It's not like IMAX where you have to look around on the screen. You want it to kind of fill the major, at least more than 50% of what you're looking at. And so it really does make a difference. Nowadays, Scott Wilkinson was saying after coming back from CES that 70 inches is the new 55 inches. People are getting bigger and bigger TVs. Now, there is this thing Scott calls the spousal acceptance factor. And basically, usually one member of the couple, sometimes the guy but not always, wants the giant screen. Because we're guys. Bigger is better. But often the other member of the couple, sometimes the wife, will say, but honey, it will dominate the room. People will think we watch TV all day. There's no room for anything else in here. And that's, by the way, how the man cave was born. Now, you don't have a man cave, so you're going to have to compromise. But you can tell your wife that, and by the way, please tell me it's not above the fireplace. You're not looking.
No, no.
Thank God.
Fireplace in here.
Thank God. You're not looking up at the TV. You're looking straight ahead. Yeah. Because I see that.
Ahead,
yeah, that's good.
We're straight ahead. We have an entertainment center. We could wall mount it if we wanted to. It's right about at city level.
So you have two choices. You can either move the couch to 5 or 6 feet away. 6 feet's kind of optimal for a 43-inch TV. Or, that's pretty close. And the problem with that, of course, is the closer you get, the higher resolution TV you need because you'll start seeing the dots. You don't want to see the dots.
Yeah.
So, generally speaking, now here's the good news. TV prices plummeted. They are so much lower than they used to be. And you can get a good 60 or 65 or even 70-inch TV for under $2,000. Look at Vizio. They're very good. You'll see sales sometimes if you have, Samsung, Sony, LG, all of them sometimes often will be on sale. Right now is a good time. They have sales going on for all of them where you can get.
What do you think of that TCL 65-inch?
Great choice. So TCL.
I was looking at.
Yeah, it's okay. So here's why I like the TCL. It's a Chinese company. They're desperate to get in the market, so they are really lowballing the price. That's good. It's got a very nice panel. Not the best, maybe, but a very nice panel. And it has Roku built in, which means it's a great internet TV as well as a broadcast TV. So I think if you're looking at a TCL, I understand you're not going to get a 70-inch. I know that. But 55 would be a heck of a lot better than 43.
Okay. All right. Well.
And if you can talk the little woman. Now, that, as long as I'm being sexist, let's go all the way in. You could talk the little woman into a bigger screen do. She hates me now, I know. it's funny. It's the other way around. My wife likes the biggest screen possible. She's a football fan. But what I did is I set it up so that in my den, once you get a den, your kids will have to grow a little bit. Maybe you'll even take over his bedroom. Once you get a den, you can set the sofa a lot closer. And he says, I'm never leaving the house. I'm never leaving. No, don't worry. We're not taking over your bedroom. You can get the sofa a lot closer. You can get a surround sound system. You can have a man cave. But, 55-inch TCL is $369 on Amazon right now. So it's a very attractive deal. I'll tell you what. I'll give you the final recommendation. It's what I bought for my mom.
Okay.
That's pretty good, right? I wouldn't give my mom some crappy TV. She says, oh, man, it looks so much better than my old Chieta Vizio. It looks really good. She's very happy with it.
Well, we're going to look into that then for sure.
You bet.
We appreciate the recommendation there.
And it's great to talk.
We're watching you live actually on your podcast.
Yeah. Great to talk to your little boy.
All four of us are here live.
Hi. Hey, thanks. Have a great day. Thanks, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. At that size, probably HD is fine. If you get bigger, the other thing you're going to want to end up doing is getting a bigger, a higher resolution. You're going to want to go 4K HDR. But that can add a lot to the price. Oh, the Roku Tickle is 4K? All right. That's good. And HDR is nice to go for. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Michael Cozio is our musical director. He sends a coded message with every song. What is the message of this song? Who is that? Bruno Mars, my boy! I love Bruno. We saw Bruno in concert this year, and then he won all those Grammys. Best record, album of the year, best song. I didn't recognize it. I should have. Is this from 24 Karat? He's a good dancer. Leo, I am not. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. Rob in Los Angeles. Hello, Rob.
Hello, Leo. I really appreciate your show, by the way.
Thank you.
I have a problem here. I've got a really bothersome phone that I hate. And yeah. And I have a really good phone. I have an old, it's older, it's outdated, an LG Vista, but I love the phone.
Yeah.
Problem is it's locked up by the major carrier.
Right. Who's
I want to unlock it and move my SIM card over.
Yes. So you have an Obama phone, a government phone.
Yes.
And yes. And you don't like that phone, but you want to use that service.
Correct.
And who's the old phone? Who's the carrier for the old phone?
AT&T.
Oh, good news. AT&T will unlock it for you. So, yeah, well, first of all, they're all supposed to. Locking phones was eventually, now I don't know if the FCC is continuing to feel this way, but it, for a while anyway, and the law still reflects this, it was considered a predatory practice to lock the phone. It's understandable when you get subsidized. Right. They're paying for the phone. They're giving you a deal on the phone. They want to lock you in for the 2 years so they can make their money back. That's understandable. But after a while, it isn't. It's you bought it. You were right. You were under contract. You did all that. You should be able to unlock the phone. And so they are mandated to do so. Verizon actually is forbidden from locking phones thanks to an FCC consent decree. They were for a variety of reasons. AT&T, though, has voluntarily agreed to unlock any phone on request, but there are a few things. You have to have had it. You have to be a customer in good standing. You know,
I'm not a customer in good standing anymore.
No, you're a former customer.
I have the Obama phone.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, call them anyway. And so you're all paid up. You don't owe them any money. You paid for that phone basically over a period of time. You can get it unlocked. Usually what I do with AT&T is after I've had a phone for 6 months, that's all, because I buy them outright. This really, they shouldn't be locking any phone you pay for outright. That makes no sense at all. But if you pay for it outright, you can put an app, AT&T app on there and request it be unlocked. And if you're in good standing, it'll, you know, in a day, they'll send you a code. They don't like to do it. They don't want to do it. They have to do it. So call them and say, I want to unlock my phone, and they will probably show you how to do it.
Okay, fair enough. I probably need the IED number and all of that.
Yeah, they can even walk you through that. They'll say, oh, go ahead. The real problem is that you're no longer a customer. That's the only hitch in the get-along there, and I'm not sure what they do then. But
right. Well, there's a multitude of websites that I've gone to.
Don't pay to unlock a phone. Those sites don't do that. If AT&T refuses to cooperate, then you go to xda-developers.com, which is a great site for Android phone unlocking, rooting, messing around with, and they will probably be able to help you do it. It's a forum.
xda-developer.com?
xda-developers, plural, .com. But call AT&T first. They're supposed to unlock it.
Okay. I didn't know that. Really appreciate the information.
My pleasure. I mean, the only reason they locked, it's like, I mean, I hate cell phone companies. And they really, you need to watch over them like a hawk. The FCC needs to watch over these guys like a hawk. I mean, imagine you go to a dry cleaner. They give you a bag to put your clothes in with their name on it, right? They give you a bag. And then you said to the dry cleaner, I want to use this bag with another dry cleaner. And they said, no, you can't. No, we gave you a free bag. You have to come here forever. And if you don't want to come here anymore, you have to pay us $150 termination fee. Imagine if dry cleaners did that. We'd be incensed. And yet we tolerate this ridiculous behavior from cell phone companies. It's predatory. I understand if they give you, you know, a free phone that they need to make the money back, and there should be a reasonable amount of time, you know, 2 years, the contract term. But after that, they should just automatically unlock it. And if you buy a phone outright, it should never be locked. It is. Why isn't the FCC spanking them for that? You pay $850 for a Samsung phone and it's locked down to the carrier? Come on. I don't owe you my business. I should be able to. I paid for that phone. It's my phone. All right, last call of the day. Donna, Chula Vista, California. Hi, Donna.
Oh, hi. My question is, I have a touch screen PC, and I want to take an online class to learn how to do painting and drawing.
Oh, how fun.
But it says use a Wacom tablet. Do I still need also the tablet?
No, that's from the old days when computers didn't have touch screens.
Oh, okay. So what do I need then? Is there some software that can...
Who makes your computer?
It's a Samsung all-in-one.
Okay, and it's Windows 10?
Yes.
Okay. So you could use your finger, but you'd probably want to get a stylus. But what my suggestion is go to the class and say, what software do you teach? Because
I think it says that on the...
There's a lot of programs that you can use. There's tons of them. But you're going to want to use the one the teacher's using just so that when she says, okay, go to this menu and do that, your menu is the same.
Okay.
Then later on, you can try their many programs. In fact, Windows comes with a variety of great programs. Paint 3D is one you can download for free from the Windows Store. Be a great
I wanted to make that little seagull.
Yeah. And frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if the class uses one of those. Why make somebody buy a $400 program?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll try that then.
But the Corel Painter is the painting program. I love, but it's hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, it's expensive, yeah. So I don't really understand how to make when I touch the screen with a stylus or my finger, how do I get that to paint?
Well, you'll see in all these programs, they have a palette, a toolbar with different tools, pen, brush, chalk.
Yeah.
You choose the tool, you choose the color, and then when you draw, your finger becomes that piece of chalk or that brush. It's one of the reasons a finger's not ideal. It's kind of chubby for that.
Yeah, okay. So, well, that's exactly what I wanted to know.
Basically, they've built the Wacom tablet into the screen. In fact, it's very likely the digitizer on that Samsung comes from Wacom. It does for most computers. So, and in fact, it's better because if you think about it, when you have a tablet, you have to learn there's a disconnect. It's not like painting on paper. Your hand is down here painting and the screen is up there. It's like you're painting on a piece of paper that then the paint shows up on the canvas. It's weird. But when you're doing it as you are directly on the screen, it's much more natural.
Okay.
Just like a real paintbrush.
And that sounds like an exciting new project.
I think it's wonderful. Are you a regular art? I mean, do you do art on paper?
No, I can't even really paint on paper. But
well, this is a great way to learn.
Yes.
Take the class. Find out what software they use, and you don't need a Wacom tablet. You only need that if you don't have a touch screen.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Enjoy. Thank you. I love touchscreens. Everybody, and I wish Apple would do these. They do them on the iPad, but they don't do them on the Mac. Hey, we're out of time. Have a great Super Bowl Sunday. I'll see you next week. Thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director, Kim Schaffer on the phones. Most of all, thanks to you. I appreciate you joining me. Leo Laporte, have a great Geek Week. Adonit, A-D-O-N-I-T, makes a fine point stylus that's perfect for what you want to do. A-D-O-N-I-T. Thank you, Synapse. That's a good recommendation. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.